petals, carrot roots, belladonna, a poisonous plant, soot, and pure water from a stream. Brew these ingredients with wine in a pot and give the liquor to your love to drink. Candy is dandy, but liquor is quicker. Methinks she should die of love for you after swallowing that. Or she must love you very much to accept it in the first place. Or she might just die. Perhaps you have reason to doubt your girlfriend's chastity? Well, if you do, try this. Find a stone called the lodestone of a pale blue color, which is found in the Indies and part of Germany or on the coast of France. Lay this stone under the head of the girl, and if she is faithful to you, she will rise up and kiss you. But if she is unfaithful, she will fall out of bed. It has always been recognized by the wise that to make a woman chaste and faithful is the hardest thing in all the world to do. But if the object of your love is married to another, it is not impossible to separate them. You must write the names of the victims on a new-laid egg while standing in a graveyard when there is no moon. Then to intone the following invocation. I conjure you, O luminaries of heaven and earth, as the heavens are separated from the earth, so separate and divide Jonathan Hubbard and his wife Abigail, in the name of the 12 hours of the day and the 3 watches of the night and the 7 days of the week and the 30 days of the month and the 7 years of Shemitah and the 50 years of Jubilee on every day, in the name of the evil angel Ishmael, who preside over pain, inflammation, and dropsy. Now, break the egg and eat it raw. Ooh. Well, when that's done, prepare to cast a love charm upon Jonathan or Abigail, as the case may be. Thus, your objective will be obtained. It's much simpler than a divorce. So, those are some of the magic secrets of love and eroticism. But I wonder, should I tell you the greatest secret of them all? Well, yes, I've gone this far. I suppose I should. But this is for the ears of females only. If there is a man at your side, send him away, for he should not know this. What every young girl should know. In all the history of witchcraft and magic, since how many thousands of years we cannot know, there is another charm, the most antique and efficacious of them all, compounded of fire, pain, and passion, used by women throughout the ages to enmesh the hearts of men and enslave them in the web of love forever, and used by some who know its power today. It is the magic cake. It is also called the confetiatio, which from furthest Asia to Europe and the New World has ever been the sacrament of love. Its purpose is to bind not only the soul, but also the flesh, so that dead to all other women, the man shall live and breathe for this one only. It is no trifling matter, girls. The woman cannot perform this magic alone. She must have the help of another woman, a witch. The witch strips the suppliant to the skin. She must then lie naked on her back, with candles burning. The witch now lays a wooden board upon the woman's loins, and on that a small brazier of burning charcoal with a miniature oven. In this she bakes the magic cake. The dough is made much like any other, of flour or meal, butter, eggs, milk, sweetened with honey. But this cake must also contain a few drops of the woman's blood. As the cake is baking, the woman may cry out that she can bear no more. But it must be so. The cake is cooking, baking in the hot flame of her passion. When it is done, she has the magic cake of antiquity, of Hindu and ancient Roman marriage rites, seasoned and hotly spiced with the passion and anguish of her loins. She will now take the cake to the man she loves, and give it as a gift for him to eat before her eyes. At the first bite, she feels a strange tumult of the senses, a giddiness. His heart beats faster. His blood rises and grows hot. His face is flushed with blushes and his body burns. He is seized by the madness we call love, and a raging, inextinguishable desire rises in him that will burn each time he looks upon this woman until the day he dies. Of course, there are magic charms and spells for every purpose, for good and evil, attack and defense, to counteract and nullify other charms. An old English charm used for centuries as a defense against maleficent witchcraft covers any kind of curse or evil charm. Listen to this. Blackluggy, hammerhead, rowan tree and red thread, put the warlocks to their speed, now the witch's spell is dead. Before we leave the mysterious secret world of charms and spells in which anything is possible, we must dwell for a moment on a certain, shall we say, unsavory item in the witch's magic armory in olden times, the Hand of Glory. Are you familiar with this deadly and terrifying talisman of death? Well, you should be. At one time, they say, no witch would think of being without one. It was usually kept on the mantle above the chimney piece, along with other grisly relics and paraphernalia of magic. What is it? Well, let me tell you. According to a medieval instruction, in order to prepare the Hand of Glory, you must go to a gallows beside a highway and cut off the right hand of a felon who is hanging there. Wrap the severed hand in a shroud and squeeze it out as dry as you can. Then put it into an earthen jar with a powder composed of salt, saltpeter, and hot peppers. Leave it in the pot for 2 weeks, then take it out and place it in the hot sun during the dog days until it becomes quite dry. In this hand, you will then place a candle using the hand as a candlestick. You will make the candle of virgin wax, sesame, and the fat of a gibbeted fellow. When the candle is lit and carried in the Hand of Glory, it will stupefy anyone you meet with terrible magic and render them motionless, thus incapable of resisting your will at all.
Yo, and you're tuned to the stream again of Free Radio Santa Cruz at freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. This is your canned version of Free Radio Santa Cruz's March 14th edition. I'm making it beforehand, but I'm making it on the same day. Got some interesting stuff coming up from Ross Camp. We're going to look back at the shitty council's latest sellout of the Ross Camp. And some other tidbits, too. A lot more to come on Sunday in the longer show, assuming I get to it. And if you get to me with your information and news, the number to call in at is 831-423-4833. You can do that during the show if you want, but you'll probably catch my machine. You can leave me a message, contact point, or a brief account of anything you want to say on the show. But you can also catch me at other times as well. That's the number for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It's also a contact point for Free Radio Santa Cruz in case you want to be a member of the collective or you have some tips about finding a studio space. We'll pay for one, both renting one, and we'll pay the tipster looking for a 10x10 space with, electricity and internet and bathroom and the usual stuff that you regular listeners have been hearing about forever. And also, of course, we're looking for a transmitter site, which is a little more dicey, but that means we'd actually get back on the air again, which we're hoping to do soon, by the way, even if we have to put it atop City Hall, we'll see. But get back in touch, and in the meantime, listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz coming right at you, and this particular show, which now begins.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star, and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So we're going to begin this show with the last shitty council meeting. That's Santa Cruz City Council. Where essentially the city council majority dumped the old guard, which was able to recruit again Justin Cummings, supposed new progressive, to essentially once again set up a drop-dead deadline for the campground, which would be now the April 17th. It was March 15th. And the previous deadline was contingent upon there being adequate shelter spaces. This deadline has no such requirement, simply that two spaces be open, at least according to Jessica York, who is, of course, the Sentinel reporter of Broken Record, or you might say Public Broken Record, or Public Record, if we want to be polite about it. And what she says is the only conditions on the closure of the camp by April 17th is that the Salvation Army reopens a 60-tent homeless camp. That's the barbed wire, boneyard, gravel, kind of crammed in, cheek by jowl, tent next to tent, riverside campground that they had along Highway 9 before the River Street campground that costs so much, $75,000 to $90,000 a month. I'm not sure if it's still that amount. And also a 50-space pilot project transitional encampment or rest-stop-style overnight camp for 50 spaces. Now, maybe that means 50 spaces for more than one person. But in any case, that really can't address the 200 or 300 people at the Ross camp currently, assuming that they need a place to go, which one suspects they do because they're there. And who would want to live there if you could live somewhere else? I suppose there's the argument that Brent Adams has made that that's a drug camp and the people go there and live there because of the drugs. And I actually haven't heard that argument from anybody in the camp, but I admit they would also be reluctant to make that argument if it were in fact, actually the case. So it's a little unclear. But the people I know aren't living there for that reason. At least that's not why they tell me. And, of course, what's happened here is that the city council majority has changed. Justin Cummings had previously specifically said that there will be no closure on March, suspended the March 15th closure date, which had been set, until there's such time as there really is adequate shelter for everyone. Now it's no longer everyone. It's simply these two campsites, the 1220 River Street campsite and a 50-space pilot program transitional campground, which apparently the city staff is now hurrying to open up. That's Susie O'Hara and Tina Scholl of infamous history in this whole situation, who have previously made promise after promise that has been broken and that has little to do with the real needs of homeless people, but a lot to do with the public relations cover and funding, what I call grant grabbing as well. And also sort of placating the liberal qualms of some people in Santa Cruz that, gee, is it actually right to, throw people out on the street or out of the campsites they're in and send them nowhere? That doesn't sound right. Now, of course, they also have the problem that there's a court decision, Boise versus Martin, that forbids that and makes it a criminal behavior by the authorities. Of course, criminal behavior by authorities is nothing new in Santa Cruz or other cities, so we shouldn't be too surprised. I'm probably going to do a longer discussion of this on Sunday, although I don't know how much of the city council's evening homelessness session that they had on Tuesday that I can actually stomach listening to it again, or how patient I will be with it, I don't know. But I'm going to begin today with sort of the nail on the coffin that Justin Cummings essentially pounded in a kind of an orchestrated situation where the Mayor Watkins recognized him. He made the motion, and Cynthia Matthews seconded the motion. Now, there was considerable discussion afterward, and there was some modification of the motion, but I think York probably got it right. That's Jessica York, the Sentinel writer, when she describes that brief description that I just gave you about these two camps now being the requirement before the April 17th closing, and after that they close it up and disperse people. There's also a bit of new information in the article, not to mention endless bigoted comments afterward, ranting and raving on the Sentinel website about the evils of the homeless and the drug camp and so forth. There's some interesting comments from the fire chief about the need for safe ingress and egress and urging campers to rearrange their possessions and discard refuse, which is fine. But there is the comment that there had been I thought I saw something mentioned about the need to take some kind of action. This was brought up at the Huff meeting. Some folks had heard somewhere that there was a real desire on the part of some city agency to do some kind of operation on pipes underneath the campground, and that was one of the reasons they were trying to clear them out so rapidly in March. But I don't know what the real skivvy is on that. I haven't got the details, and it doesn't seem to be in this article. I had thought that there actually was such a thing. Of course, York's article does not mention at all the broader homeless population in Santa Cruz, nor the number of people that are in the Ross camp. And that is, although she goes great detail about how unsanitary and crowded and dangerous it is, and there have been three deaths there, and she doesn't mention that there are four deaths, actually, one in the parking lot that doesn't have to do necessarily with the Ross camp, but only one has been directly linked to any drug overdose, for those who like to rant and rave about drug use, which is happening in the camp and is happening among the homeless population. Try living outside and see how you feel after a while. I guess it would be one comment to that, not that it's a good thing to do, but it may be a sort of an understandable response for some folks. And it certainly is a necessary reality, unless you want to discard people who are drug addicted or somehow make the fantasy claim that there are drug programs available for folks at a rate that is commensurate with the drug addiction in the population, at least among those who want to go into those programs. So let's listen now to a tiny bit of the city council meeting from 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock on the Tuesday the 12th.
I think one of my questions was answered with respect to wet shelters, although I do think it's worth acknowledging
Sandy
that
Brown.
If we are not going to consider some alternative spaces that are a low barrier in that way, perhaps we wouldn't call them wet but more tolerant, that we are not addressing all of the population at the Gateway encampment. I mean, that just has to be said. So, you know, I do hope that we can have that conversation and figure out what to do about that, because I don't think it's, at least not for me, I'm not willing to say that we're going to close or, you know, completely shut down the Ross camp if we don't have those alternatives. It's really important that we recognize reality. I just want to say that.
And that, of course, is something that Justin Cummings is willing to say and was never willing to explain why he is willing to say it or why he is willing to do it. It has to be said there's a couple of peculiar things about this council meeting that I noticed, which may or may not be relevant, but I'll mention them anyway. There was a closed session of the city council in the morning, kind of an early time to have it, but I guess the agenda was packed with items. None of them mentioned the Ross or Gateway camp, as Sandy Brown calls it. But immediately after folks made public comments in what's called the open interval before the closed session, which happens at 10:45, and the closed session prepared to go sort of into a closed room where they would make their backdoor deliberations about what's going on, their backroom deliberations, I should say. The city attorney interrupted and said, just a moment, Mayor Watkins, let me make point out that, well, actually, I'll play exactly what he said.
I don't believe we have any other additional public comments, so at this time, I will adjourn the meeting to the courtyard conference room where the council will go into its closed session.
Pardon me, Mayor Watkins. I just have an announcement. The two anticipated litigation items on your closed session agenda under item C relate to, one, the Verizon encroachment permit that was on your February 26th agenda. That was an encroachment permit for a design permit that was approved by the city, and that was out on Morrissey Boulevard. The second significant exposure to litigation item relates to the homeless encampment behind the Ross building.
Okay. Thank you, City Attorney Condardi.
Just a point of order. Tony, why are you announcing those now, and why weren't they in the agenda previously? I mean, we're in public session now, so they could have been here.
I'm doing it for the minutes as to just affirm that we have complied with the Brown Act with respect to significant exposure to litigation items. The Brown Act requires that there be an announcement. If the circumstances are known or a threat of litigation has been made.
Because folks who might have wanted to speak on this may have come and they saw it in our agenda earlier.
So, okay, at this time we'll adjourn to our courtyard conference room.
So, what was happening here? Well, why is this important? Because the Ross camp was not on the closed agenda, and so should not have been discussed without 72-hour notice, so the community, particularly people at the Ross Camp and supporters of the Ross Camp and social service providers who might point out the dangers of shutting down a camp beforehand, and those who want to, before you have the adequate shelter services or at least alternate campgrounds, and also the fact that it is a violation of state law, the so-called Brown or Public Meetings Act, to have items on the agenda which you haven't noticed clearly. And this one wasn't. And Condotti rushed to remedy this, but he can't remedy it just as you're going into closed session after the open comment section is over when nobody is there and knows about it. And he must know that. So we actually, the next day at the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, discussed the issue, and a representative of Huff, or actually an independent individual who is sympathetic with some of what Huff does, went down to the city attorney's office and demanded this not be done and that the matter be reheard in 2 weeks on the closed agenda. And also, I sent a letter to Attorney Condotti, which he has not responded to, demanding that this be done as well. But the real point is that later in the evening, and you're going to hear this shortly, Justin Cummings, the council member, deserted the council majority and changed his position pretty much substantially from what it was 2 weeks before, which at that time was don't close the Ross camp on March 15th or at all until such time as there is adequate shelter for the folks at least in the Ross camp, though it has to be pointed out that even if you sheltered every single one of the people in the Ross camp, all that shelter would be used for them instead of for people outside, of which there are hundreds and hundreds outside the Ross camp who need shelter spaces as well, particularly important given the Boise versus Martin decision, which found that you can't arrest someone anymore, tell them to move on even, harass them with police activity for sleeping or camping if you haven't got a place for them to go. And Santa Cruz, of course, doesn't. So the issue to me was, if you listen closely to, and you'll hear it soon, Justin Cummings' very elaborate proposal, which is pretty much, although I've got to go into it in more detail, and may on Sunday when I come back with another longer show, talking about closing the Ross Camp on April 17th if two campgrounds are set up, the Boneyard Campground and a second rather unspecified campground, that's completely adequate, and that will be that. And you don't have to figure whether people in the Ross camp are adequately served in terms of the numbers that are there. You just accept those two campgrounds. And one of them is for 60 tents, which is usually means somewhere between 60 and 100 people. And the other is for another 50 tents in another spot, which could be, I suppose, for more. But the River Street campground, you may remember if you've been following this situation for the last year, it's not only very expensive, $75,000 to $90,000 a month, it also was very cramped. Everyone was shoved together. Now, a lot of people appreciated the fact they could be there, store their stuff during the day. They had shuttle service away, but, of course, they weren't allowed to walk away like or walk back to the camp if they wanted to and leave when they wanted. Like adults, functioning adults, they had to be treated like six-year-olds, prisoners, disabled people, and get shuttle service in order to placate the fears and prejudices of a few neighbors who have become really the big issue in a lot of this campground situation, whether it's not opening up the car park on the edge of town that the Association of Faith Communities wanted to do, or allowing Delaware Avenue to remove the no parking at night signs, which are illegal anyway, according to the Coastal Commission, as I understand it, though now there's a little confusion in my mind as to exactly where the coastal zone is. I thought it extended as far as Delaware, but I'm having trouble reading their maps. I want to be clear about that, and we're trying to get a clear understanding of just what is in the coastal zone. But so far, the city has been forced to remove some coastal zone signs, and it is clear that people are still being ticketed for being in some of these permit parking, no permit parking at night, except by permits at night areas of Santa Cruz, even though these have nothing to do with real parking problems and everything to do with running away homeless people in their vehicles. I got one notice, and you'll hear that later, I think, in this program, of a guy who got a ticket out at Harvey West. I don't know if Harvey West is kind of far away from the coast. I don't know if it's still in the coastal zone. I suspect it may not be. But the issue of Justin Cummings coming in with a very elaborate proposal, very specific, that he must have made, I would have to assume, and I tend to assume, earlier, before the city council even sat down to hear the public speak. I could be wrong. He could have worked it out during the council meeting. But it sounds like that this was percolated through this closed session on the Ross camp. The information was provided and a hearing was given before the public was informed it was going to happen. It was, in essence, a behind-the-scenes done deal pushed through in order to pressure, persuade, and ultimately co-opt one of the so-called progressive council majority, which is, of course, no longer a majority. Anyway, getting back to the city council's evening session now, I don't think that would have happened, this thing with Cummings, necessarily, if there had been adequate notice. So it was another example of twisting the agenda around, this time arguably illegally, in order to get a desired result, the elimination of the Ross camp, which really seems to be what a lot of this jabber about encampments and entitlements and encampments and so-called social services and housing plans and task forces and commissions and two-by-two committees with the county. It's about two things: getting rid of the Ross camp, getting rid of the homeless, and also getting money from the feds, the state, and the county in order to at least provide the illusion that you are creating something that addresses or at least covers up the needs of the homeless community in Santa Cruz. The real objective, of course, is to drive the poor away and open up the city to greater gentrification and development. That seems to be the reality, in my view, and that seems to be what they're doing. Anyway, let's tune in again on the 7 o'clock session. We're actually going into about 10:30 or 11, maybe even closer to 11:30, when, after having heard a lot of public comment, only 2 minutes each, however, and 4 minutes for those of us who had organizations, the city council is coming in with its prefabricated results. Unfortunately, without any real objection from the and questioning from the three progressives, Glover, Brown and Crone now in the minority, with Cummings voting with the Matthews majority. But let's listen in. So, again, we're going to hear Brown pointing out that that there's inadequate space. Or actually, what she's really pointing out, they're talking about low barrier and high barrier encampments. So far, they have not been able, the city manager's team has not been able to persuade many people in the Ross Street camp to go into other facilities because the facilities are so repressive. And also, some of these folks are indeed drug users. And they also, you have to provide essentially for wet camps for people who are either alcoholics or drug users, unless they're ready to go into programs and unless those programs actually exist. Neither of which is the case for a lot of folks in the camp, and certainly for the facilities in Santa Cruz. Let's hear.
Was answered with respect to wet shelters, although I do think it's worth acknowledging that if we are not going to consider some alternative spaces that are a low barrier in that way, perhaps we wouldn't call them wet, but more tolerant, that we are not addressing all of the population at the Gateway encampment. I mean, that just has to be said. So, you know, I do hope that we can have that conversation and figure out what to do about that, because I don't think it's, at least not for me, I'm not willing to say that we're going to close or, you know, completely shut down the Ross camp if we don't have those alternatives. It's really important that we recognize reality. I just want to say that. And I also just want to say that there are so many people who have come, I just have to say it now while I have an opportunity. There's so many people who have said to us, you know, kind of repeating this line that, you know, can be spread through our ever increasing and ever aggressive social media outlets, that by doing anything tonight, declaring a shelter emergency or looking at transitional encampments, that we are doing something that is entirely out of left field. It's going to invite a whole bunch of people. It's going to enable. It's the sky is going to fall, essentially. But we actually declared on January 23rd, 2018, a shelter emergency. It is currently in place. So it is not the case that we are doing something out of the blue and taking up this mantle of shelter emergency all of a sudden.
And the point here is, of course, the subject on the City Council agenda was having stalled the Glover resolutions for the last two or three council meetings and sort of shepherded them off to the toxic grasp of the staff. The only issue that is really documented here for this agenda is the declaration of a shelter crisis, transitional encampment, and safe parking programs as... And there's also a listing of city-owned properties, which actually resulted in was a complete reduction of all areas to a very, very few, according to the persnickety standards of the staff, around what areas could actually be used. Of all the many green belt spaces, there are only a very, very few that can be used for an encampment. What they're really trying to say is there aren't areas that can be used for encamping for homeless people, because their real constituency, the constituency of the staff, the police, the downtown businesses, conservative residents on the west side, bigots everywhere, and property speculators want to get rid of poor people, and they don't want them to give them an opportunity to stay in town, even though they're going to be staying in town. And if you were to disperse the Ross camp, they're going to go, you know, pouring into the neighborhoods, pouring into the Greenbelt, pouring into other areas where they have to go to survive in this area, particularly those who have real connections here. Many of them are going to be doing that. And so to ignore that, to attempt to be blind in the face of reality to that is, as Sandy Brown seems to indicate, that's exactly what this constituency has been doing for years, in the hope they can only persuade everybody to just disappear and go somewhere else. And that ain't happening. In fact, more people are coming, and more people are being made homeless by the failure of these same groups of people to deal with rent escalation and property profiteering.
It's happening. we are operating under a shelter emergency, and we are in fact making a decision tonight about expanding or revising it as an alternative to the homelessness emergency that was proposed 2 weeks ago that many came out and said they didn't want us to do. So I just have to be clear. I mean, I think we all need to acknowledge that. I wish more people would who were writing into us with some, what I would consider to be a, you know, basis of misinformation there. And so with that, I will stop there and I will ask the question just to clarify. I think I'm getting an answer, but if you could just say it so that we're clear, you are asking us, although it's not in the staff, there is no site in the staff recommendation, you would like us to identify a site tonight.
Or at the very latest next week. And I do have slides that we can kind of...
Even though the city council for at least a month has in essence given the staff advance notice they want them to find sites and to actually identify them as areas where people can go so they can begin to set up these transitional encampments or wet camps or dry camps or whatever you will, the staff is throwing it back at the city and at the same three council members that they don't really want to pay much attention to. I mean, they did a very elaborate staff presentation of this area and that area, and they found all kinds of good reasons why all of them were just completely unsuitable all over the place. It's just as Catherine Byers, the former mayor in 1990, well, it was actually in 2000, said regarding homeless people, there's just no place for them. As she said 6 years before with Celia Scott, an even more liberal council member, when they were asked to look for places where homeless people could set up a campground, they just could find no place in Santa Cruz, just no place where people can go. That's just how it is, which, of course, is ridiculous. But what it means has to do is there's no place that wouldn't offend someone. And the idea that unless you're going to have everybody be happy, including, you know, the rich guy who can't stand to see a poor guy outside looking through the glass while he's eating a nice hot meal, that you're more concerned with his feelings than with a homeless person's hunger, you're not going to find any place, because that really is the bottom line for a lot of these council members and staff and interest groups.
Go through as it relates to the site, but I did want to make one comment back on the issue of wet shelter. So it is actually quite a nuanced barrier in that, for instance, what I think folks might even consider somewhat high barrier Salvation Army programs, there are plenty of folks with substance use disorder that are using that program. They hand over their paraphernalia and whatever else they might be bringing, and it goes into an amnesty box. So there is a distinction between using on site and being in a position of having a substance use disorder. And so I think the distinction...
You know, I'd be curious to know how many folks actually do that. I mean, in a way, you might consider it a kind of a breakthrough to have Susie O'Hara admit that that's been happening at the... if that's Association of Faith Communities she's talking about in the winter shelter. I'm surprised. I'm in a way pleased, because it means people are going to get access to shelter who are drug addicts and who need it, but who are also addicted and have those conditions. But I'd be curious how many of the total drug population will actually do that, or whether it's only a very small minority. There are no figures here. They're just sort of vague claims. And again, the purpose of Susie O'Hara's attempt, and indeed they're having another council meeting on the 20th, coming up this next Tuesday, because they want to really immediately nail down at least the appearance of a temporary shelter, of a temporary encampment, of a transitional encampment. And so... It's actually, I'm sorry, the 19th, not the 20th. Thank you. So that being the case, they're eager to have some kind of fluffy cover for what they're doing, because they're not going to be providing for the people in the Ross camp, but they have to pretend to be providing for some of them, or it's going to look completely not credible. And that doesn't matter, of course, for the community, since most people, frankly, don't have homeless survival and civil rights at the top of their agenda. But it is important, if those homeless folks follow Anthony Prince and his state union of the homeless into court and demand that they then be left alone because they're not being given any real options. And so they'll just stay camped downtown in front of the businesses, in front of City Hall, on the west side, wherever the hell they need to be, because their own campground, the one that they were forced into because there were no other options, the Ross camp, and because they were driven out of other areas they were camping in, like the Poganip and the parks, has been shut down. So she asks, are we allowing, Susie O'Hara asks, are we allowing substance abuse on site, on the premises?
Or are we focused on harm reduction and ensuring that behavioral norms are being adhered to? There are plenty of people in our community that have substance use disorder that can adhere to those rules. All right.
And that, of course, frankly, is what middle-class people might like to hear. It's an attempt to please that middle-class constituency that thinks, oh, well, they're serving the good homeless, and the rest of them can all go to hell. But in fact, a large number of folks, it's ironic, I don't think the drug population is as big in the total homeless population as critics of the homeless who would want to dismiss them all as skunks, punks, drunks, addicts, crazies, and so forth do, as either there's the mental health population, and then there's the drug population, and then there's the truly homeless, the truly worthy homeless. This is the kind of classification you find, essentially ignorant classifications that have nothing to do with the real aspects of real human beings that are out there, that are in a variety of situations, but all of them need shelter, all of them are being denied housing, and all of them are essentially being treated like, worse, certainly worse than pets. You might say worse than animals here in Santa Cruz, and not just in Santa Cruz, but Santa Cruz, of course, is where we're at here. So what O'Hara is essentially doing is she's precluding wet camps. She's precluding the idea of drug use, which actually is probably what goes on. It probably went on in the River Street campground that was out on River Street and that is about to be resurrected. It went on in the San Lorenzo campground. It went on, of course, in the Ross camp, which wasn't a city-sanctioned campground, was a tolerated campground. And the real issue, of course, is that it would not be done in a public and abusive way for the community. People, you know, shoot up in their homes all the time. You don't hear others screaming that people should break down their doors and stop them from shooting up, which is maybe the fantasy of some drug warriors, and we've seen how effective that's been with respect to marijuana over the last 100 years.
So, I'm sorry. Yeah, I did have another question. So, when Cynthia you say Matthews. Urgently develop and approve a small-scale pilot program, your thought is that you would come back at our next meeting with a proposal for both a site and operator for that. Is that correct?
So, I think for the purposes of next week, coming back and having a conversation
next
on...
Week at our
on-site selection, we'll know more about operator capacity and where that fits in, hopefully by next week, but I wouldn't necessarily.
This, you know, as I listen to it now, and I heard it once before, I was actually there for most of this at the council meeting itself. Some of it I missed toward the very end because I got weary. It sounds like Cynthia Matthews has talked about this beforehand with the staff, and it sounds like they're having a... There's a pre-planned agenda here where they actually have a provider, they have a site. It has little to do with the needs of the homeless community, the needs even of the Ross Camp, part of the homeless community. But it's enough, they think, to set up a sort of a pretty facade so they can then at least cover the situation to persuade at least the fourth council member, Cummings, to go ahead with the closing of the Ross Camp, which is what is the true agenda item that they're working on here. And also to make sure that I don't think they're having any problems getting the federal money. The problem they may have if the court action actually goes further, if homeless people do sue to enjoin to stop the closing of the Ross Camp, as some homeless people are talking about now, and there seems to be some movement to do, then they're going to try to use this as their defense in court. Oh, we have shelters that people just won't go in them, but they're available for people. You see, there's these two areas that we've set up, one with 50 tents and one with 60 tents. What do you think of that? Of course, the fact that there are 200 or more tents out at the Ross Camp, the Gateway Camp Plaza campground, apparently doesn't faze them. That's not the issue. hold on to your lunch. Here's some more.
Really say that for sure. So now, I mean, now is the time for us to take action. And we have a number of recommendations that were in our report, some of which were agendized as priority to consider and by three council members. So we have a chance to take action on that this evening, as well as other input from the staff and other ideas that have been brought forward.
And actually what is happening here is what Watkins has done at previous meetings. It is true these issues were brought forward by three council members unsuccessfully for the last three meetings because Watkins refused to agendize them twice, and then they got put off until this agenda. What she does now is instead of turning to the three council members who have recommendations that they want to move as a motion, she turns instead to Cummings, who has this prefabricated motion, which essentially is, as I mentioned before, the establishment of these two campsites and the new closing date, April 17th, for the Ross Gateway Plaza campground. I'm going to skip to that.
I will acknowledge Vice Mayor Cummings because he mentioned he has a motion he'd like to submit, and then we'll go ahead and see if others want to.
So I'm prepared to make the following motion that is aligned with the staff recommendations that we see before us with a few minor shifts. And so, and I can pass this over to Bonnie, so in case she doesn't want to.
Can we put it up on the, do you have a viewer screen? Oh, you have multiple. Oh, great.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you. You want to put it up so the audience?
And Cummings does have multiple copies prepared. He didn't, as far as I know, get up and leave during the meeting, although I didn't watch him every minute. And to have these already prepared indicates this was a preconceived decision that he already made. That's significant. And here we go. He's passing it around. And the council is looking at it.
That was weird.
Yeah, I think it's being put up on the viewing screen for people to look
so,
at. So,
many of these points fit within the staff recommendations that was just presented above. A couple of the points that were in those staff recommendations weren't included, so I'm just going to add those in as well. But update and reaffirm the council adopted city-county joint action plan by opening a 60-bed nonprofit-managed encampment at 1220 River Street on or before April 17th, 2019. Open a small-scale, no more than 40-bed, 6-month pilot transitional encampment and or safe sleeping and storage site on or before April 17th, 2019.
Notice this is all about April 17th and the closing of the Ross Camp.
Closing the Gateway encampment to coincide with the opening of 1220 River Street program and pilot transitional encampment or safe sleeping and storage site. So just having the closure be contingent upon those two sites being open. Provide a minimum of 1 week notice to Gateway encampment sleepers and day users as to closure date. Move to direct staff to return to council on or before April 9th, 2019, with the siting and operator recommendations for the pilot program. Move to implement the project scope of the transitional encampment charter per the suggested timeline, incorporating safe parking to ensure a deliberate and inclusive community process. Move to table discussion on transitional encampment and safe parking ordinance amendments until that subject is contemplated in the project charter scope.
So that immediately defeats the whole main thrust of the evening, which is to establish an ordinance that declares a shelter crisis and gets a specific set of proposals which clarifies what the guidelines for a transitional campground are. So in other words, it essentially returns everything to the city's city manager. It excludes the possibility of other agencies opening anything up. It sounds like to me, and I could be wrong about this, and I will try to get more input, but I'm wondering if that isn't the case. It certainly is an attempt to table the main resolution
that the three, his so-called three allies, Crone, Brown, and Glover, brought forward. So they're no longer his allies. His allies are now Matthews, Myers, and Watkins.
Move staff to identify one city parking lot for the utilization of the Association of Faith Community Safe Parking Program to host up to five vehicles per night and return to City Council on March 26, 2019 for approval. And project charter, including conducting a shelter feasibility evaluation and unsanctioned encampment management plan.
And again, what we have here is a whole series of endless chatter into the future about issues, studies, discussions. And the only concrete thing is for a return for five parking spaces in a city parking lot. That's what the 50-person, 50-car parking area that was originally proposed and promised by Susie O'Hara and Tina Scholl, the two city manager staff members on this issue, had promised last fall, actually last summer, to be available last fall. And then, of course, broke their word, as well as breaking their word in keeping the Boneyard campground going until April, which they also closed back in October. So he is completely surrendering to the council's essentially non-action report, its attempt to frustrate any attempt to make any really significant even harm reduction for homeless people who are outside and currently together in the Ross camp.
And finally, adopt the revised shelter crisis declaration.
And I think I stand corrected here around the issue of the shelter crisis declaration. I think they are accepting it. They've already defeated a broader homeless crisis declaration of several weeks ago. Again, it continues to be unclear to me what the distinction between these two is. Maybe I can get some understanding of that and discuss it on Sunday. I will try to do that. But that's what we've got here is essentially the sellout of the Ross camp on the 17th of April coming up. You might call it a delayed April Fool's joke by the Cummings, who doesn't explain why he changed his position, which previously was, I'm not going to close it until there's adequate shelter, or until there's really adequate shelter. And now it's just, I'm not going to close it until these areas are open, which he seems to believe, against all evidence, is adequate shelter. And the other thing that's a shame and a disgrace here to me is that the other three council members don't, the three progressives, so-called, Brown, Crone, and Glover, don't hold him accountable or just ask him, not even trying to be mean and nasty and what the fuck are you doing, but just say, well, why have you changed your position? Do you suddenly feel that this is adequate shelter? What if there's some folks who are unsheltered? This doesn't get brought up. And the only person who votes against this is Glover in the end. We're going to talk more about this, I suspect, on Sunday, but that's kind of a rather long-winded preview of it. Now let's get a little musical break.
Would you like to go with me down my dating street? Would you like to come with me to this ghetto land? See the people lock their doors while robbers laugh and steal. Beggars watch and eat their meals from garbage cans. Broken glass is everywhere. It's a bloody scene. Killing plagues the citizens. Yes, they are. didn't cause such cover their hands. Politicians laugh and drink, drunk to all demand. Families buying dog food now, starvation roams the streets. Babies die before they're born, infected by the flea. Now some folks say that we should be glad for what we have. Tell me, would you be happy in village ghetto land?
And that's Stevie Wonder, Village Ghetto Land. A little hard to hear, but a little slow, but never played it before, so you got to hear it here. You're tuned to the stream of free radio at freakradio.org, or listening perhaps to an archive at huffsantacruz.org, where you can hear hundreds of old shows. So please, dig in and educate yourself, or at least amuse yourself. So here's a few announcements on what's coming down. There is going to be a meeting tomorrow at 4 o'clock out at the Ross Campground. I believe Susie O'Hara, who is the woman you heard speaking at the City Council, who to me is presenting lots of, shall we say, charming fairy stories about homeless shelter in order to capture the imagination and the pocketbooks. And apparently the votes of the City Council, she'll be out there chatting with the Ross Camp Council, which is essentially, anybody from the Ross Camp wants to go. And also, I believe it's an open meeting. At least that's what Alicia Kuhl, who is the Huff liaison with them, has told us. And she's going to be out there, so you can check that out, too. It's going to be on the path right near the pedestrian bridge right above the Gateway Plaza campground. Watch out for the guard. It will tell you, don't park here. But, of course, you can park there. You are allowed to do that in spite of what the Ross guard, the security thug, may tell you. Again, that's tomorrow on Friday, March 15th. That was going to be the closing date, but remember, the community was able to stop that from happening. Maybe we can stop the April 17th date from happening. There is talk of this possible injunction going around, so we'll see how that happens. If you're interested in being a part of that, give a call to 423-4833, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF. And I will put you in touch with the relevant legal folks and ordinary homeless folks who are trying to put those legal papers together. Food Not Bombs, of course, has its afternoon meals, 4 to 6, Saturday and Sunday, in front of the post office. And there you can pick up forms which are going to be useful if you are trying to help document the fact that the city is lying about its shelter sufficiency, if you will. The reason this is important is the fact that there is a mendacity, falsehood, essentially a cover-up story being proposed by the city around the shelter crisis, is this gives them the justification for running homeless people out of town. But if it is shown to be, in fact, false in the courts, there is the chance, I'm not sure how big a chance, but some chance that judges will be forced to say, whoa, wait a minute, guys, if you're going to run these ne'er-do-wells out of town, you got to present some at least plausible deniability here so we don't get, our wrists slapped by the higher courts. Of course, the very highest court has not ruled on the Boise v. Martin decision. That's the Supreme Court of the U.S. Of course, the really highest court, which is the people in the community, is the final court of public opinion that we have to appeal to. And again, in these communities, it's often the activists. And when the vigilantes are the right, the Take Back Santa Cruz types are active, we get that kind of mentality. Or when long-standing institutions like the police and the merchants, the chambers of commerce, downtown association, all these groups are powerful, real estate agencies, the power of money becomes more important than the power of people. People get isolated from each other, and they don't stand together as they need to, and perhaps as someday they will. On Monday, March 13th, there is going to be a meeting at the Civic Auditorium at noon. That's downtown, across from Kitty Corner from the library, at the Tony Hill Room. That's the room on the right of the Civic Auditorium. It's in the Civic Auditorium. You just go into it and you go to the right. It's going to be a safe, looking at two models for the traditional encampments. Actually, these are the two that the city council is going to be voting on next Tuesday I'm a little bit behind the times. It's March 19th. Tuesday, March 19th. The letter that I just got went out on March 13th. So Tuesday, March 19th at noon, there's going to be this discussion of models for the city to use essentially as its fluff and puff cover for eliminating the Ross camp and also going after homeless people citywide under the Martin versus Boise decision, or at least ignoring the Martin versus Boise decision. The safe sleeping and storage model, which would provide, according to this handout by the city, approved sites where those experiencing homeless can safely sleep, keep their belongings, and receive outreach, connecting them to social services. That's always what they like to say, but of course, there's very little. Known as the dusk to dawn encampment would not be occupied during the day, but presumably you could store stuff there during the day. I don't know. It says safe sleeping and storage model, so maybe they mean storage too. So far, the city has never done a storage model, except for a limited number of people. I guess sometimes, I'm not even sure of this, it may be the winter shelter has on some occasions provided some storage. I'm not entirely sure about that. Then there's the transitional encampment model, safe space for residents 24 hours a day, individual tents, as well as community space and storage, kind of like the River Street Boneyard campground. This is the second campground they mentioned. And that's going to be, you have to agree to an agreed set upon criteria, by which, of course, they mean you have to pretend to be like a middle-class person during that period of time, even though you don't have middle-class resources, pretend to be sober, pretend to have no drug addictions, pretend to have no children with you, perhaps pretend to have no pets, pretend that you don't have a lot of stuff with you to store. You've got to do a lot of pretending and this kind of thing, and a lot of people aren't going to be interested in that, and it's a very limited number, and will fill up with people who are interested, if they are. For those particularly who are terribly disabled, also you have to pretend you don't have disabilities, because those can be problems in these kinds of models as well. It doesn't say it's disabled accessible. It may be, I suppose. But given the kind of short notice they're trying to do this on, again, the objective being to eliminate the Ross camp, it's a little dubious they're going to be able to do this. This is the cover story, and they have to put something together. Again, they're doing it noon on the day before the city council meeting that's going to vote on some of these issues in the evening. I don't have the agenda yet of this city council. I'll take a look, but I don't think it will be coming out until later tonight or tomorrow. There's also a meeting on Monday, the day before this, again, out at the Ross Camp, of the Ross Camp Council, and that they're going to be meeting with City Council member Drew Glover. If anybody wants to go out there, that is going to be at 3 o'clock on Monday the 18th. And you can check that out if you'd like. If you want to get to this March 19th meeting of the noon group to talk about safe sleeping or transitional encampments, they may try to block you at the door because they want you to email in advance to mbunch@cityofsantacruz.com. That's mbunch@cityofsantacruz.com by 5 o'clock the day before. I would say show up anyway and go into the room and sit down and listen, or and then raise your hand and speak if you want to. But again, this is the city's version of its so-called public input into the issue, which is actually prefabricated, distributed in advance, and ready to go. At least, such is my fear and my suspicion. So let's turn now to a few interviews that I did out at Ross Camp myself on the, I guess it was last Monday, when Council Member Glover showed up. Actually, it was before he showed up, just kind of handing out some street spirits. I knew out of the new February and March issues of the Street Spirit, if you want to see it. I don't know that there's anything local in there, but there are issues about homeless struggles in other cities like Berkeley and Oakland, which might be of interest to you. If you want to see the Street Spirit, you can see it in the public library. It should be now available in the usual magazine rack in there where it's supposedly available to look at. You can also get a copy of it from me if you see me around town, or if you call me on the Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line, 423-4833. Or you can also wander by the Sub Rosa, where I've left some copies there. You can sell it, too. If you're a poor person, you want to, you know, get a little extra. It goes for $2. You keep all the money. You don't have to pay anything or put anything out. It's just an opportunity to essentially, well, panhandle with pride in a way. You're giving out a service. Or it's called, for some of us, an alternative to panhandling, which is, I guess, the genteel way of putting it. And I'm going to begin with an interview as I approached last Monday the meeting area for the meeting with Council Member Drew Glover, where he was meeting with the Ross Camp Council. I ran into Elise, a Huff activist, and here's what she said.
So it's about 20 to 3. I'm out here at the Ross parking lot. It's the 11th of March. I'm talking with
Elise.
And Elise, you say that I missed the cops. What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't know. Maybe an hour ago I was here at the camp hanging out, and a police car showed up and two policemen got out, and they just went up to a tent, and I wasn't there when they first started, but basically I came in after they were already getting people out of the tent and starting to search through the tent, and I came up, my phone's kind of broken, and it doesn't, well, I don't want to say it, but let's just say I was not going to be as effective as I wanted to. So the first thing I started telling the police is that you need to have a search warrant to go through somebody's tent, you know, and do all that. And so the police started talking to me, and the people in the tent were, you know,
did they appreciate your intervention?
The people in the tent, whose tent it was? Yeah. Well, they were like, thank you, and we don't really need that. But then I started saying really loudly, hey, in the camp, I started saying, hey, does anybody have a phone that works, that records, that we can film these police? And anyway, nobody came up with one, but I did take their pictures, and they may have been hampered a little bit, but I went to talk to another resident in the camp. The people whose tent it was were very friendly to me, and they said thank you, but they were like dissuading me from doing what I was doing. Then I went to another tent where, kind of following the police at a bit of a distance, because I don't like to get too close. But anyway, they were going through the main walkway in the camp, and another resident was talking to me about things that had been happening at the camp recently. I had started to engage her in conversation. And the police walked right by us and then walked up to another tent and started examining a bicycle. They didn't ask if they, you know, they didn't say they had a search warrant. They just started looking this bicycle up and down. So that's when I took their picture. And anyway, I left the camp, and I took pictures of their license plate and
you got the evidence.
Number on their vehicle. Yeah, and I crossed the bridge and I started calling city council members, excuse me, and telling them what I had just witnessed. And then I thought I was kind of clear, and I walked back over the bridge to come back to the campish and just as I got to the other side of the bridge, I turned around. The police car was right behind me. It apparently followed me across the bridge.
They like you.
Very quietly. But, yeah, the point being, people do have rights who are living outside and homeless, and our constitutional rights allow that. They're not supposed to just come up and search people's tents, as I said, without a search warrant. And
or they
so
can
forth.
Request, and if the people agree, they can't. Often people are intimidated into agreeing, mm-hmm. so, you know.
The woman whose tent it was, initially, she clearly was not agreeing. She did get out of the tent, but she was clearly annoyed, and she was...
Did she have a parole or probation condition?
Anyway, I don't know. Yeah. But I just wanted to let it be known that you know, the police were here, and it seemed like my activities may have slowed them down or interrupted them a bit. Maybe they were just a little less zealous to go into...
Creating a problem for the police, eh, Elise?
And I think that's what we need to do, is support each other, to have our rights, to support each other, to be in solidarity, and to make sure that our rights and dignity are respected.
And there you have it. We've been talking with...
Elise.
Thanks, Elise. And remind me of your name.
And now we're going to continue with these interviews. So I'm on the phone here with Drew Glover, who's council member, the only one who voted against essentially the April 17th closing date at Ross. Am I accurate on that one, Drew?
But only with the stipulations that we had the shelter space available for the people to transition into.
Oh, boy, I thought you...
On the opening of 90 additional beds.
Right, well, that, of course, doesn't cover the number of people that are currently in Ross, you understand.
Well, if you take that and then add it to the Salvation Army numbers and the other shelter options that they're offering with the Association of Faith Communities, it is my understanding that that would then provide the adequate number of potential shelter spaces to allow people to transition out of the camp so that it can be reset or have the issues of public safety that have been cited by the county health supervisor, county health person, and their concerns with regards to the density of the camp, but then also some of the issues having to pertain with potential disease spread.
Mm-hmm. Did you, I mean, I thought you voted against one of those issues. You were the lone voter. Was I wrong about that?
I was the lone vote in moving forward or not tabling the conversation around the declaration of homeless emergency, and then there was another one. But I had no idea you were calling me, so I don't have these specifics.
No, I appreciate that, and I know you wanted to wait until you had the specifics in front of you so you don't, you know, give misinformation. So, are you, I mean, I've been looking at Jessica York's story, and because I wasn't there for the final, endless city council meeting, I'm glad, you know, that you took as long as you needed to, or actually you probably didn't take long enough. Would have been nice to move it into an addition day and put it on the in the Civic. I don't know why you guys are not demanding that, as I said at City Council, and I should ask you about that. But let me ask you first about the substantive question, which is, York has said that they plan to open the Boneyard, i.e. the River Street campground, and then some kind of either safe survival shelter. What is it? It's a storage, safe sleeping area and or a transitional encampment for 60 beds. One is for 60 and one is for 50. You say there's also something else open that will serve the population, the entire homeless community, of course, is over between 1,000 and 2,000 people.
It's right. So with regards to the camp and the ability for us to be able to close the camp, that's contingent only on our ability to open up the 1220 River Street site with the approximate 60 beds and then an additional camping system, whether that be a transitional encampment, a safe parking program, or a combination of the two that will offer an additional 50 beds to come out to a total of 110 additional beds that should be opening up before the camp will be closed.
110
beds. A date of the...
April 17th.
April 17th.
110 beds in addition to what else?
In addition to the Salvation Army bed spaces and the Association of Faith Community Parking Program.
The parking program has five spaces. If I'm not mistaken, isn't that what? Oh, I guess they have five space. That's five for five vehicles. Is that correct?
That's right.
That has nothing to do with the magnitude of the Ross camp, much less the broader homeless community. Are you suggesting that it does?
I'm suggesting that those are the shelter systems that are either A, currently in place or plan to be put in place before the 17th of April to allow for the transition of people from the camp into alternate shelter options.
You mean the transition of, what you mean is the dispersal of people from the camp. I hate to put it this baldly, Drew, since I don't think you really favor this. I certainly hope you don't. Out, period. And if they get into one of these, if they can squeeze into some of these spots, and there's far more people in the Ross camp than the number of beds you are already itemized. We're talking about what, five parking places and the Laurel Street.
110 beds for the, or sleeping spaces. I would want
right.
Beds,
correct.
110 shelter or sleeping areas for people, and then whatever. I believe it's a 40 person at the Salvation Army on Laurel.
And all of these are controlled spaces that require you, for example, not to use or participate in any drug activity, right?
To my knowledge, I asked at the meeting if it was potential for us to establish multiple locations, one that is middle or high barrier, like we see at 1220 River, and one that is low barrier that we can see as an example from, like, Dignity Village or other ones along those lines. That was not... There was no action with regard to setting up multiple styles of camps or low barrier camps. And as we continue in the process, it will be important for us to acknowledge and be able to analyze the feasibility or the reality of people and whether or not they're willing to transition into these camp models or not, and then how to best accommodate those people that don't feel comfortable in those style camps. We heard from community members at the meeting who... Some of whom who had lived homeless for 17 years at least or so in Santa Cruz, I think one gentleman quoted, and he does not feel comfortable in staying in the camp structures that are being proposed, like 1220 River or some of the other ones that were.
Right. I mean, I was there, and I think some of our audience was probably there too. I guess my point is I do not understand. And maybe you could give me some clue as to this. I noticed that the closed session before people went into it, suddenly City Attorney Condotti suddenly noted, oh, we're talking about the Ross camp. I just thought I'd happen to mention that, though not within the 72-hour grace period and legal period where you're supposed to do that, so we could actually come and reference any such conversation before the closed meeting. I have to ask you, without revealing any details of what went on in the closed session, heavens forfend, why tell the public about that? Whether you think there was a significant action taken in the closed session that resulted in Justin and I guess you're deciding, and the other council members deciding to go along with this completely insufficient number of sleeping spaces, even for people in the Ross camp, and shut it down on the 17th.
Well, as we get closer to the 17th, I would imagine that we'll revisit the progress of us being able to get there. But to answer your question, no, there were no substantive decisions, in my opinion, that were made that would have influenced anything. Just it was more informational than anything else.
So what I noticed was that Justin seemed to come with, Justin Cummings, the council member who made the resolution, seconded by Cynthia Matthews, to do this closure with what seems pretty clear to me is completely inadequate shelter space. This was a change from the previous resolution, which was there will be no closure
until such time as there actually is adequate shelter space. In other words, the implication is that these openings of these two campground areas, plus the small restricted campground that you know shelter that continues, is going to be adequate to cover the Ross camp. Is that your understanding realistically, Drew? I mean, you're not. I'm hoping you're not buying that, but are you?
I was really surprised that he came with that pre-prepared motion that included the staff recommendation. It was a little strange for me because I hadn't had access to or was aware of the staff recommendations or what were coming, and I don't know if my other colleagues did either. So to have him come with a set of recommendations that included them as well as some other things, I was kind of caught off guard by that. But then I am going to try. My goal was to get transitional encampments and state parking programs in the works and moving forward in Santa Cruz. Now, they have set a goal for themselves, which is to make sure that there's adequate shelter space between now and April 17th. There are two meetings between now and then where we will, I'm sure, be getting updates about the progress and the realities of those shelter spaces. If it seems like there will not be enough shelter space for the people in the camp as we approach that first meeting in April, then I will, of course, be making the motion to, or I will be interested in exploring the postponing of it. But right now it is an issue with the community and the surrounding area. It's an issue with the people in the camp that say that the people I've met with in the camp say they don't want the camp to keep operating the way that it is. So the only way that we can do that is to begin to transition and separate the people that are interested in making, you know, change and transition and those people that aren't interested in making change and transition, and then we can approach it there and figure out the next best step.
Well, I think at, you know, 3 o'clock on Monday when you'll be showing up at the campground and meeting with the Ross camp, and I guess some members of the public will too, since Alicia Cool has announced this as an open meeting. You'll get an earful as to whether people. I heard nobody say. I know Mike Sweet had the opinion that, you know, it'd be nice. Nobody really wants to be here. That may be true, but I you didn't ask them. Do people want this camp dispersed with those alternatives? I think you get a pretty flat no on that one, and I think that it's really disingenuous to suggest otherwise, that, oh, well, people in the camp want to get out, too, and, you know, so does the fire department, and so does Arnie Leff, who has a nice warm house on the hill, I might add. And I know you're not in that.
Robert, so I appreciate your questions and your passion, but I really don't have a lot more time than I can spend on the phone right now.
Okay, well, if people want to reach you on this issue, how should they do this?
They can write me an email. My email directly in my council office is dglover@cityofsantacruz.com. Probably the best way to do it because it goes on the record, and then I can easily access it that way for referencing and other kinds of things. They're always welcome to call me. My phone number directly at the office is 831-420-5025.
Okay, and you will be appearing publicly at this. Do you have public meeting times, by the way, for the rest of the community that you want to announce, or?
I have open office hours that are on Fridays from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. and also on Fridays from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m.
So do people need to let you know in advance, or can they show up tomorrow and just express their concerns? Because some of them, you know, may want to ask.
They can just show up. That's the whole point of office hours, is that I'm just there. So if I'm in a meeting with someone else or someone got there before them, they'll have to wait in the lobby. But I'm available to the public Fridays for 2 hours per Friday.
At City Hall. All right. I will try to pin you down a little later when you're available.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Robert. And again, thank you for your coverage of the issues and for your passion around human rights.
Uh-huh. Next time, vote against this kind of shit, please, Drew.
All right. Have a great day.
Bye-bye. And that was Drew Glover at 4:30 in the afternoon on Thursday, March 14th. That's Bob Marley, Them Belly Full, back from 1979. So now let's transition, as the fashionable rhetoric has it, to the Ross Camp area. Here's an interview with one of the Ross Camp Council, Michael Sweat. And actually this begins with, I believe, Mama Shannon, or as a combination of the two. So here we go.
Former neighbors and my friends and my kids' school teachers to see this. I don't want this to represent us. This doesn't represent me, right? But they're doing tickets in the Poganip saying that the reason why the Poganip is closed in certain areas is because homeless people are camped there. I myself fought a public nuisance case for months in the courts here because the city attorney sat on the opposite side. How often does the city attorney prosecute a case of infractions and misdemeanors? But the city attorney prosecuted my case based on the fact that he prosecuted me as a public nuisance because he was saying homeless people in general are the reason why people can't use the Poganip, that the areas that are closed in the Poganip are closed due to homeless people being there. So what I'm saying is designate an area of the Poganip, one that we are mostly concentrated camping in right now, from the first turn by Sycamore Grove all the way down to the creek on the railroad track side of the highway, from the railroad tracks to the highway, and decriminalize that area. Okay. Say that we are allowed to camp there, and then they can open up all those other areas they say we're keeping closed, because we'll all be camped there. Have a regular biweekly trash pickup. They could do police patrols if they want to, and we will self-govern. Give us 2 months, 90 days, and watch what we can do with that area.
Well, it's great that you have an area in mind and a structure in mind. So.
And if they expect us to get housed...
And the other voice is Drew Glover.
Society, how am I supposed to reacclimate when I can't do my laundry?
Right.
When I can't charge my phone, when I can't cook my food, when I can't take a shower, when I get treated like a criminal every time I try to take a shower. The problem is that that property was, I was there during the dedication ceremony when the woman who owned that property said, for all eternity, in perpetuity, she used my favorite legal term, in perpetuity, this property is to be used for the homeless of Santa Cruz to provide them with sanction, she said. No, the area that is now the Transitional Housing Facility, HRC. She said when she designated that property, when she donated it to the city, that this was to be used, this was to be used in perpetuity for the use of the homeless. So you would have one place where you were safe, a sanctuary, where you could go to use showers.
It's also my understanding that the De La Viega area was gifted to the city.
Well, I've heard that about the Poganip as well, but I've done a lot of research, and the only thing that I found that I can prove is that HRC, that corner, was donated to the homeless. I don't know if you're aware of this, but the city took that over, and they have now turned it into a for-profit transitional housing facility. That is not why she donated that property to the city. I was, like I said, I was there at the ceremony, and I have found stuff in my research that has proven that she donated that for the homeless people of Santa Cruz.
Well, if you can,
and what I'm saying is we need a homeless day center where we can, that doesn't turn into a shelter, that isn't for overnight, but that is for always and ever for us to reacclimate to the normalcy of being back in. So if I'm, responsible, if I have to donate my time so that I can take a shower and do my laundry, if only way this place is going to stay open, if I make sure that my peers don't throw trash around, they're not hanging out, they're not causing a problem for the neighbors, I'm accountable.
Sure, exactly.
I'm going to be accountable, right?
Yeah.
And that gives us a sense of responsibility and accomplishment.
And ownership and pride.
Yeah,
exactly. And originally when that place was opened, We weren't allowed there from certain hours unless we were using services. And if you were caught in the neighborhood,
don't go anywhere, Des.
you were X for 30 days. So there wasn't anybody hanging out. There wasn't anybody on the property. And well, this is before the fence is engaged.
It's great to know.
We were not around there because we knew we would lose services for 30 days. We were held accountable.
Right.
And
so you have the experience and the ideas to be able to move forward with it.
If we had a place that was the same, that was cooperatively run, and I spoke to the mayor about this, I wrote a whole nonprofit proposal about it.
Send it to me.
If we had a place that we were in charge of, we were accountable for, where we could do our showers, we could cook our meals, we could do our laundry, we could charge our phones, we know better than anyone who needs what kind of services. Who needs mental health services? Who needs medical services?
Yeah,
we are better equipped than anyone to steer people towards those services.
Cool, and exactly that's why I want to get your input.
We need a decriminalized area where we can camp, where we can have stability.
Great. I'm going to pause you, so that we can give someone else the opportunity.
And Desiree, that's what I feel is necessary for all of us.
And that is Mama Shannon.
So having a place like this is actually a safe place for females. I mean, any female can come in here at any time of the night and walk through here and nothing to be afraid of. I mean,
this is Desiree speaking.
Bashing on women here or any foul language used at any females here because it's not allowed. But here is a safe place for us. If we fall or we're having a problem, it doesn't matter what man is around. They come out and they help. Mm. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So being out there by ourselves, without the men, without being in a community, without having somebody close to you, is very dangerous. You know, and I just want to say that we need that. We need a place that we can feel safe.
We need community.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's not safe out there for a female.
No,
it's not. You got to get real tough. You know, and I am all woman, believe me. So,
And this, remember, I just spoke to Drew on the phone. He said there are homeless people who want to leave, don't like the campground, don't find it safe or appropriate. Well, here's a member of the camp council who doesn't feel that way. That's somebody else who he was listening to last Monday. Now, maybe he's heard other people who feel that way, probably has, and indeed you may hear some of those voices. But clearly there's mixed sentiment around this issue, and I guess I'm feeling a little frustrated at... Drew did say he didn't have a lot of time to talk, and I think I did learn a few things from him, rather depressing things when I spoke to him, and rather, in a way, expectable things from city council members... who I've often told people, particularly homeless folks, you don't want to put your trust and your confidence in city council members. You just don't. Not because they're bad human beings, but because they are city council members. And they're not members who are really primarily concerned with your interests. They have other interests that really take priority, whether it's the city council procedures, whether it's the next election, whether it's the voices from elsewhere in the community that are more powerful. There are all kinds of other priorities. Whether it's the very structure of the city council process that requires them to make compromises with other council members in order to do deals and so forth, that don't deal with the true facts and the true needs in the situation, but like to appear they are. And that, of course, has been my criticism of the past city councils. And it looks like it's going to be my criticism of the present city council, but we'll see.
I can get pretty dumped up. But there's a lot of females out here that don't know what to do, and they're scared, and they get abused by other people, and it's blamed on us. Mm. And when we're tight. We're a real tight community. There's a lot of good people here.
That's what happens.
A lot of good people.
Space together and share space.
And it doesn't matter what you do for whatever your thing is. We look beyond that. It's called common respect and dignity and helping each other out. Mm. And that's what we want. You know, and we've got a good set of people
and
here.
And they can self-govern in the right
situation. Yeah, we haven't had any emergency vehicles here.
And drug tests and nanny book. We can self-govern.
We're all adults here.
None. Pedophilia and rape and sexual assault are not homeless.
Uh-huh. Right.
But the majority of victims are.
Yeah.
And what does that tell you?
Yeah, and we have to get tough. And I can get pretty tough, but I'd rather be a female, you know? I want to be taken care of.
That's true.
And right now, if this gets broken up, I won't have that security.
That's
I won't have that safety.
That's
and that puts me at risk,
Michelle,
you know? And I have cancer,
Michelle.
You know? And I'm in remission, and stress brings cancer back. And I don't need the stress.
Police force, you know?
Two friends, and it wasn't because of drugs, you know? And one was, you know, the heart. And
talk about how they treated him.
And they treated him like he was nothing. Like, you should have seen what they did. How they handled my friend, our friend. Yeah, how they handled Asa. He died in that tent right there. In that tent. And they came and they
looked in the windows at a naked woman this morning. The police did.
And they tore the tent apart and then they left him there. They didn't even cover him up. They just left him there like that for hours.
We need a moral revival.
This is not cool.
Here.
You know, he was a person and he was a good man.
Yeah, and one of the things I've noticed is that the deaths that have happened recently tend to be older individuals that are either experiencing homelessness and then they're like 70s, 60s, 70s.
And they're very good people with heart and passion and kindness, and it wouldn't hurt a fly, you know? These are a woman and a man. They were real dear friends of ours, and we hurt every time we lose one, you know. But there's not been no emergency vehicles here to pick up any overdose or any of that stuff. Nothing like that. Not one.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the opponents are that want to see this camp close use the deaths as a reason to close the camp. But it sounds like from what you're saying is that if we were to, the people that are dying here are because of the lack of services that are available to people, not because it's a camp. And it's not because of overdoses, because there hasn't been an overdose in the camp. It has to do with people's ailing bodies in the elements.
Another council member is not here right now, but she got into Paige Smith, but the other day, and she's a really nice lady, doesn't bother nobody, but the other day she was going to all her stuff got wet, so she put it in a basket, you know, because that's all she had. She didn't have a cart, so she put it in a basket, all her stuff, her blankets, and she starts walking down the levee. She starts walking up the levee, right? She starts walking up the levee, and this man who's in spandex with a very nice, expensive bike, riding his bike, looks like he rides his bike here every day, jumps off, rides to her, jumps off, starts calling her all these names about how she's a homeless people and da-da, and he hates homeless people, and he got her cart, and he pushed it down, and he threw all her stuff all over the levee. Then after that, this is a man who obviously has a good job and dresses well, and his hands are clean.
Has enough money to buy a bike and spandex clothes.
Yeah, and then he goes and he jumps back on his bike and goes down to under the Water Street Bridge right there and spits in one of the homeless guy's face and says he's sick of us.
So if you could start filming this stuff, and if we could just put a call out to everyone as much as possible for them to film these situations whenever something starts to happen.
And the security guards over here too.
Exactly. So film the security guards, film the people.
No, this one right here, called the police on Alicia.
His name's Jeff, and he's called the police on not just me, but Vicky from the DSA as well. They were delivering pallets, and there's one particular security guard over here. His name's Jeff Villarreal with First Alarm, and what he's doing is if we come here to deliver supplies, he's calling the police and telling them that he suspects us of dealing drugs to get the police out here.
Yeah, he does.
To harass us. He's done this multiple times, not just to me.
So we've not yelled at him. I've talked to him very kindly and told him, you know, about the situation.
So I'm not sure what kind of communication. I'm not sure.
And this is Alicia Cool and Desiree talking. And Drew, of course, is the people that are clustering around to have this meeting. The Ross Camp Council consists of Desiree, Michael, Crystal, I think Mama Shannon, and another person who I think they're introduced later. But again, they will be meeting again next Monday at 3:00. That will be on Monday the 18th. And again, to remind you, there is another meeting tomorrow. If you want to contact Drew, he'll be in his office between I think it's 9 and 10 and 4 and 5, he said. That's at City Hall, across from the main library. He is accessible. You can talk to him, as you've heard on the air, at least to an extent, before he has to hustle away. If you want to contact the Ross Camp Council on Monday, they will also be out at the camp at 3 o'clock, and that's going to be on Monday. And at 4 o'clock on Friday, tomorrow, there's going to be, again, I want to remind you, a meeting of the city council bureaucrats, Susie O'Hara, with Ross Camp Council people also out at the Ross Camp, at the probably along the pathway. That's going to be at 4 o'clock tomorrow. So check that out if you'd like. And then at noon on Tuesday, there will be this meeting in the Civic Auditorium around the issue of safe camping and storage and transitional encampments. It looks to me a bit like a pro forma city council. See, we're doing output 2 hours before the council meeting so we can show that we did some public outreach, I guess the word is, rather than input and outreach. So that's happening at the Civic Auditorium on Tuesday, as well as a city council meeting. And as of the hour or two before the airing time of this particular broadcast, that city council meeting's agenda has not been released, although you can view the video of the last city council meeting if you want to go online. It's available on the city's website at I think it's cityofsantacruz.org, if I'm not mistaken. .com, sorry, cityofsantacruz, all one word, .com. So again, although I've said this before, in series, and I hope I have this right, Friday morning, that's tomorrow, 9 to 10, and 4 to 5, Drew Glover at City Hall in his office. If you want to meet him, talk with him, 4 o'clock in the afternoon out at the Ross Camp. If you want to meet the Ross Camp and observe or participate in the discussions with the Susie O'Hara, the city manager's assistant, and the Ross Camp Council. Funat Bombs, 4 to 6, Saturday and Sunday. If you want to pick up documents that will help you to assist in assisting the injunction actions that some Ross Camp residents are trying to take with the help of attorney Anthony Prince. Essentially, it means documenting that there is no shelter space, calling up the shelter daily to show this is true. Then on Monday at 3 o'clock, there'll be a Ross Camp meeting with, again, with Drew Glover. You'll be hearing just like this. You're hearing some of this now from last Monday on this particular audio. You'll be hearing more of that now, and you'll be able to actually speak with the Ross Camp Council. And then if you can, before Monday is up, if you want to be a part of this noon discussion of safe sleeping and storage models, transitional encampment models at the Civic Auditorium, get in an email to Megan Bunch at mbunch@cityofsantacruz.com saying you intend to show up before 5 o'clock. You got to get the email in on Monday the 18th to show up the next day, the 19th, the day of the city council meeting. And you show up at noon at the Civic Auditorium. And, of course, if you want to show up at the Huff meeting the next day, we're having Huff and Conscience in Action meetings now regularly every week, 11 o'clock, starting at 11 at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific. If you want more information about any of this, if it's all coming at you too thick and fast, or if you have some confusion because I seem to be contradicting myself here and there, and making corrections as I go, which is what I do, give me a call at 423-4833 for the latest correction. And now back to the Ross Camp meeting with Drew last Monday.
What kind of communication system y'all have here? But if you could send out a message so that people could, anytime people are driving by screaming, anytime people are being harassed on the river levee, if you could make sure that everyone knows to have their phones ready to record that, that will give me the opportunity to suggest that we need to add more protections for people that are in the camp, and also to work on holding people accountable for what's going on.
These people, yeah, and there's children, they have their kids yelling foul language. Yeah.
You, next, you want to be next?
Driving by slowly.
We'll go Coral, and then we'll come back over to Brother over here. So Coral.
Okay, I have been simpatico with all of you.
You got something you want to say too? Can we just go here really quick, because she may have to go.
I want to say that my son had been homeless for almost like 5 to 6 years. And he has always been a good citizen. The only time they arrest him is when they find him underneath a tree. I want him to come and live with me because I'm an older lady, and I need somebody to help me. And he helped me when he had a job at Cabrillo College, and then his job was taken away from him. And so I know it's going to hurt a lot of people's feelings, but, you know, it was mostly like the illegal citizen.
Oh, undocumented.
Undocumented that took me his job, and then he became homeless.
Oh, wow.
He had a little home on a hill in Watsonville. And he had been, like, harassed and abused, and he's an American citizen. And I don't think that's right.
And where is he now?
I don't know for sure. Every time I see a person in the floor, I always go there, I ask him, is your name Elden? Elden Sham is his name. And he was working, he had a humble job cleaning up the classroom, and then that was taken away from him, and he went on unemployment. Because they were kind enough to listen to his story, and after the unemployment, he was living in his van. The van was taken away by the police. He used to keep canned food in there. His dog. He lost his dog. He lost everything. So here he is out in the street. And I went to a housing authority with a friend of mine to ask, please, can you attach him to my voucher? And the people there, they say, let the river be his blanket. We don't care if he dies there, and I know it's with mostly American people that they are telling them to die in the streets, because we have seen and we have heard about people, the American people dying in the street, and that's wrong.
I appreciate you sharing your story. I hope that it will help to inspire my colleagues to move as quickly as possible, if you're okay with me sharing it.
Yeah, I appreciate it, because my landlord doesn't, he just doesn't like him.
I've born here.
You know, everybody carries bags. Bags come inside our apartments by themselves, you know. But this man here, my son never did anything wrong to him. He just hate him. And that's wrong, because now my son... they told him, they say, if you want food stamp, if you want help from the government, go and lose weight. You know?
I'm the only one. For a very long time.
You
know, been...
I have got to go and lose weight.
I'm
that's
appalled
wrong.
By the fact that people,
you know, because we are not in Africa.
Who have been here,
yes,
last
ma'am.
Time,
you know?
I have been here.
And where people got to lose weight because of starvation and the weather, you know? Here, this is a great country. They can go to Home Depot and buy the material.
Yes, ma'am.
And build little things for the homeless, with like one bedroom or two bedroom inside a little cabin. They can solve the problem. Let's go in the cemetery, dug off all the dead people's bodies, and burn their bones, and build houses for the living.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Mike, say one more thing.
I'm happy that.
Yeah,
I'm happy that.
Mike, she doesn't say anything yet. You mind if she
I'm
goes?
I'm happy that,
we'll come back that, to
that Drew, you're here representing. And I'm happy to be a neighbor. I live at the tannery. I'm visiting Capotico way before I lived at the tannery. But I'd like to help this movement, you know, keep their hope. And how can I do that? Now, some of the complaints from where I live have been that. The sidewalk is blocked, so people are intimidated, and I'm sorry the parents feel so afraid they can't bring their kids through here. There should be some kind of way the kids can feel safe.
Yes.
So I would walk with them, but I think that door's closed, and I just like to know if people want to be accountable to keep this clear. A little bit more awareness of the parameters of the public, you know.
Well, it sounds like from what they've said so far is that they want privacy, which means that it would be more kind of secluded away from the main walkway in general. But figuring out what that looks like and how to implement that either at this spot or at the spot that the other
River Street.
Yeah, other representative mentioned that down by the Poganip and the railroad tracks. What was her name again?
Shannon.
Shannon, yeah, absolutely. So there's definitely that that people are concerned about and wanting to figure out how to make it work. It's just a matter of we have to find the spot, figure out the structure, and then make it so that people have privacy, A, and so that people can use the walkway and feel safe. It's a combination.
Without moving, or are you staying after you move?
Well, that's the thing, is depending on what's going to happen with this space, since they don't like, I mean, I don't like the fact that people can drive by and throw M80s and frozen paintballs at people, so it's to figure out of whether or not this is the most effective place to be able to provide safety for the people that are currently in the camp, because that should be a big thing that we're focusing on, is the safety of the people in the camp, but then also figuring out ways to make it so that this corridor is usable for people that are the tannery, so that the families and kids can feel safe in using the river walkway. So if we can identify other locations and offer those spaces that are a low barrier, then there's a greater feasibility that we can then excavate this place and make it so it either is better for what we're trying to do or identify other places. I mean, that's the best
What's
I can do at the
tomorrow
moment.
Tomorrow?
Okay,
yeah, Mike had a question, and then we'll come back to you.
I just want to make a statement real quick. For years, this has been going on, okay? I haven't been a part of this until now, and maybe I've been slumping, you know. Maybe I should have stood up years ago when I was camping out in different places.
This is a Michael Sweet, a member of the council, who I originally said was the opening speaker. He wasn't. Sorry about the confusion.
And did something like this. If you're really concerned about it, you'll put everything else aside and go straight at it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've tried to do. I'm telling you, communication that we have here with the city council, city manager's office, is perfect. You couldn't get no better, because you're dealing with the people that you have to deal with. You have to move. We don't want to be here, believe me. And for the neighbors that live around here, I'm telling them too, we don't want to be here. This is not an ideal place for an encampment of this size, because it's too crowded. And as soon as we can figure out a place to move to, and if we're allowed to police ourselves the way some of us want to, then we can show city council, the citizens of Santa Cruz, that we can be responsible and be productive citizens just like them, even without the homes.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? One of these days, they'll do something about the rent, and it won't be like that anywhere. Everybody will have a home. But until then, we got to do what we got to do. I hate to say this the way I'm going to say it, but I'm going to say it. I don't care how many times the mayor says we got to move. We don't have to, because you haven't provided for the 5,000 that's homeless in this county. And there's 5,000 in this county. I've counted them for the last 6 years, three times. There's people in Ben Lomond. You're going to have to build a shelter or something there. You're going to have to do something in Watsonville. Every place has to have their own space, because you can't run everybody together. That would be like a new town in the middle of a town, you know. So we get together, sit down and talk. I know there's places that the city has empty lots that they can use. There's empty houses that nobody lives in around here, abandoned houses that can be used for different things. Yeah.
We also need like day centers.
You guys
open up day centers, we can actually find out what's really going on.
We had a day center over there, and it's been run by about 15 people, 15 different groups of people. And every time somebody ran it, somebody was doing something faulty. Okay. And that's why it's been down. Excuse me. But what's going to happen is we're going to come and sit down with you guys and talk, and we're going to iron this out the way it's supposed to be done. We're going to find a place to move people. We're going to have a couple of encampments and be able to afford it and be able to give people a little bit of confidence in themselves that they can have their own community and still be homeless. You know what I'm saying?
One
we're
way
homeless,
or another,
but we can still have our home.
It'd be better.
You know? And that's the important thing for me, is just having these people to feel like they mean something, they stand for something, other than just somebody riding by yelling names at them.
Believe in their own somebody-ness, as Dr. King would say. Thank you for that,
Mike. They're human, just, you know, we're human just like everybody else.
And you, my friend, I think you're on your way out and you're with this group.
Yeah, yeah. Rez.
Rez, Drew Glover.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
So I just basically wanted to see what your opinion is on, because we have, like, you drive around Santa Cruz or the areas around at night, there's a lot of parking lots that are empty.
Yep.
What if we could have a program where you have designated safe parking lots where people could sleep in their car without having to worry about cops waking them up and, you know, like, and also you could also provide, like, a central storage location for people where it could make moving around easier.
So you'll be pleased to know that about a month ago I introduced policy language that establishes safe sleeping zones, and they're coming back tomorrow with the language. When they first gave me a timeline, they said May for the parking programs and August for the camps. I said, no, that's ridiculous. And I've made it so they came back in 2 weeks instead of 7 months with the language. So we're going to be having the first reading of safe parking zone permitting and ordinance language Tuesday, as well as safe transitional encampment area language.
7 o'clock.
However, that was either postponed or tabled. I'm a little unclear which. And so it did not get a first reading as Drew had hoped.
7 o'clock, along with a list of all city-owned lots and city-owned properties that could be used for transitional encampments. So over the last couple of days, I've had my interns poring over those sites and trying to find ones that are usable. So far, we found three. And I work at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, so I'm trying to convince my colleagues to open that up as a temporary shelter space as well, with some of the heat funding that's coming in to be able to handle costs of management and all that kind of stuff.
There's no indication that any such areas have been opened up, other than the areas that a few churches have allowed for up to three vehicles. Although now, I guess, with the Martin versus Boise decision, the city's ordinance limiting that to three vehicles is no longer likely to be enforced. So churches could open up more. It's just not, I'm not aware that any of them have, or certainly none of them have publicly announced that. But I think the status of that parking ordinance didn't pass. At least its status was it got either tabled or simply defeated. And in order to get more details, check out with Drew tomorrow between 9 and 10 or 4 and 5. And you can also call him on the City Council line 420-50. And I think he said, and Drew's number is 420-5025. And here's a bit more of the Ross meeting last Monday.
Across from the main library.
Low barrier, though, Drew. Low barrier. We can open up as many things as we want. We can hurry it up. But if they're not low barrier, people won't use them. I don't want a parking program that's like a background
Cool,
check,
a
drug test. You have to wake up at 5 a.m. If you don't register by 5 p.m., you can't stay. Just a safe spot where I can pull up and legally park. Not something that wants my whole life history and to nanny me and put me in some program because I need to park.
Well, I thought there was a city ordinance that allows sleeping in your car.
No.
It's the opposite, sleeping. Actually.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I have one statement that I want to make.
Why does the city pressure UC Santa Cruz to not admit so many students above their capacity to house those students? Because that's one of the issues. Rent control is another issue.
And unregulated rental market, yep.
That's something that you're working on.
So with the university, the city passed Measure U, which was a statement essentially that said, hey, UC system, don't add more students. We unfortunately don't have any control over the UC system. It doesn't do anything, but we don't have any legal power to stop them from adding students. So they're
considering letting homeless people
stop services to the UC.
So as Robert mentioned just now, the most radical thing that we could do would be to cut services to the university and then make it so it's difficult for them to operate, but that's essentially what it would be, is like, hey, what's going on? So that is a potential strategy to follow. It would take a lot of organization and a lot of dedication and political will from the city. I'm not sure if we're there yet. And then also with
the issue of students that are experiencing homelessness, because there are a lot of students that are experiencing harassment on campus from that are sleeping in their cars because they can't afford rent because of the unregulated housing market, because of the oligarchy in Santa Cruz that was able to beat Measure M with outside money and half-truths. So there is a pressure that we're trying, there's pressure that we're trying to put on the university to try to get them to house students on campus in cars, in lots, but they're pushing back with their strict no camping policy. Oh, wow. Yeah, so okay, just a really quick answer, you and then Robert also wanted to say something, is university we can put pressure on through those different kinds of direct action. It's going to be really hard, but something that we can do. And then the other thing is they're trying to build housing up on campus, and they're justifying that is going to benefit the housing market. But with the 3,000 students they're trying to add and the 3,000 new housing they're trying to build, it's just going to offset it and keep it the same problem. So there's a lot of stuff. And then with rental regulations, we were able to get the weakest thing possible imaginable, which is the exorbitant rent increase protections, which are not protections at all because they can just arbitrarily evict you and then raise the rent without paying you the relocation assistance. And unfortunately, the power structure that is the moneyed interest in real estate have been able to threaten my colleagues with the concept of recall, which is the reason why they tabled the conversation of just cause evictions, which is why we have no eviction protections, is because they were threatened with referendum and recall. I was the only vote to move forward with the conversation because I'm not going to let them intimidate me into not pushing for protections. So it'll be a combination of rallying community support around the concepts of regulations around rental facilities and rental housing, raising money, but then at the same time coming out and doing some serious grassroots organizing beyond what the Yes on M people did, because they were great, but it was found it's not enough. Yeah. And we need to really start humanizing the problem. That's why I'm glad that Robert's out here recording audio of these stories that people are telling me. I'm going to work with my communications team on coming out here to put a face to this so it's not just like this blanket statement of people experiencing homelessness, and then also just try to tap into the compassion of people. But that's really hard to do when our values are so diametrically opposed from profit to people. So either way.
The city manager, Mike, was telling me, has come out and is talking along with Tina and the assistant city managers about addressing the issues here. I'm happy to see that, you know, they claim to want to be involved with you. Frankly, I've seen them in operation be very skeptical of what they're doing is my suggestion. But in the meantime, I'm just wondering what the permanency of this camp is at the moment. Do you have a two-week hiatus, a four-week hiatus? Is there much chance that this camp can be closed down summarily? And also, it's being overcrowded, so is there a chance that you can move for an emergency opening of a second campground because of the fact that this one can't cover it for everybody?
Yeah. So at the last meeting, as you know, and as you may not or know, I tried to get the city to pass a state declaration of local emergency around homelessness. They do. Right. The mayor in a meeting that I had with her said that I was manufacturing the emergency. So that kind of gives you the perspective of what we're dealing with our leadership structure, is that they don't understand or are refusing to acknowledge what's going on. So with regards to capacity of the camp, like I said, I'm identifying three locations that I think that we can immediately open up pilot programs. I'm trying to get the resource center to open up as a nighttime emergency shelter. And with regards to parking programs, there are sites, but the police chief doesn't want the parking programs to be in the downtown area. So they're trying to put people up at the Demio Lane dump, but that is just like to the symbolism in that in itself is problematic, and that being one of their decisions. So I'm working on it is a short answer, but I need the support of people like y'all, students especially, people, working class people, low-income people, people that want to see positive progressive change happen, because right now I feel like I'm pushing my colleagues, which is great, but if I have more support from the community in being more vocal and active, not just at city council meetings, but also writing letters, meeting with them individually, writing editorials and press releases, doing analysis, looking at data, all those kinds of things will help to move the concept.
How secure is the camp?
One more question.
And how secure is the camp is the other question. Just a second. The camp is, as of right now, it has no close time. So indefinitely it will stay open currently. Now that's going to be in consistent
debate at each one of the next city council meetings. So at any moment, if there is a switch in the majority, it could close the day after any future city council meetings. What's important, and this is where the lobbying comes in and the humanizing of the situation, is that if we need to convince my colleagues that we need to give this as much time as we need to be able to establish the shelter stations before we redistribute everyone, hey Ryan, before we redistribute everyone out around the community, because if we close this and push everyone out, not only is it going to put people in more danger, like you mentioned before, especially women, but we're just going to hear complaints from the neighbors because it's going to make everyone go back out into the communities, and then you're going to have to deal with a bit more vigilante pushback.
And
from
you lose everything that we've already built.
Right.
Yeah.
It's that same cycle just over and over again, and it has to end here. And when...
How about...
Well, this gentleman hasn't had a chance to say something yet. What were you going to say?
My name is Gary. Where are you?
Come join us, Gary.
Come up, Gary. My heart is hurting right now, man. They're doing the same thing they're doing in other counties and states, man. There it is there.
I've known him for a long time.
Thank you, Gary.
Can we also acknowledge that anything needs to be not put on a short-term basis? We have no housing, so anything that's open for a short period of time is not going to be helpful. I understand, like, the pilot program and stuff like that, but I'd like to see a transitional encampment that's not like, you know, you can only stay here for a month or two.
A transition
to what? About
right.
People that are partners?
Because
what
a transition
about boyfriend and girlfriend that have been together for years, and they're not married?
Thank
we'll
you for
see
sharing.
You know? When's the next council meeting?
Tomorrow.
7 o'clock.
There's a shelter. They opened up the shelter for women, but what about the women that have their boyfriends? That they're not going to separate from them. What about them? You know, you got. What are they going to do?
And there are other people that have pets. There's other people that have belongings. So it's this combination.
Yeah. The shelters that would, like Paige Smith and that, they'll take people. They'll take women right now, whoever wants to go in there. I tried to get into that place for 3 years, and the only reason why they didn't let me in there is because I wasn't needy enough.
Well, talk about why you can't stay there now. Didn't they recently offer you because you smoke marijuana because you're sick, and you can't stay there if you smoke marijuana.
I can't. Even that means I have to get up. I have to get up and put my clothes on and go off campus just to take my medicine.
Funds.
Yet they have a smoking designated area for the people who smoke tobacco, and I don't smoke tobacco. I have cancer. I don't smoke tobacco. I smoke marijuana.
There's people that's down here right now that's talented as far as we're working with their hands and building things. You don't need a whole bunch of construction companies and all that. You got people right here who don't have jobs, who you could pay in the building of this encampment. Let them build their own thing. Let them have a hand in it. Give them some money for doing it. Make them feel like, give them some self-worth. And you know,
send me that news story and that idea.
Okay. My friend applied for city money to help people homeless build little tiny houses in the city. So whatever reviews on that list.
You could propose that as a local New Deal.
Right.
I'm excusing Desiree. She doesn't feel well.
Thank you, Desiree. Take care of yourself. I really appreciate your input.
Thanks, Desiree.
I'll be there tomorrow.
Okay. You can propose as a local New Deal. That's already something that has been successful in the past with Roosevelt, I think, and then the new Democrats are pushing for a Green New Deal, that already has a lot of traction among the people, and it sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
You just push a local New Deal.
Yeah, someone else mentioned something around that kind of framework, like the Santa Cruz Deep New Deal or the whatever we want to call it. Yes, let's talk about what that structure looks like.
Yes.
Send me an email, because this is what it's going to take. Is it going to take all of us, not only the people that are living here, but also people that have the vision of what it is that we want to accomplish, so that their vision can be realized and we can get them out of the situation, or let me rephrase that, they can get themselves out of the situation, since all the power that they need is already in this camp. It's a matter of having the political and legislative support to make it so it's feasible or possible for them to reach those goals. And so it's just